Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Marnie Svedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie and Friends, a place where leaders share practical, helpful, and encouraging ways to get anything important done faster, better, and smarter. Right now, I encourage you to sit back, buckle up, and join us for fun, laughter, practical help, and clear thinking, the kind of discussion that focuses our attention off of the fluff and onto the most important stuff in life. Again, welcome to Marnie's Friends. Let's get going. Hi, everybody. This is Marnie Svedberg. Welcome to another edition of Training Online for On the Go You, and you can listen live or you can listen to the archive afterwards. Excited today to be talking about one of my favorite subjects is organization, and we're kind of talking about an aspect of organization today that we don't always think about, which is confidence. And the name of the program is Confidence Boosts Yours. Our guest today is Elizabeth Hagen. I've known Elizabeth for years and years online and through different things like that, but I haven't met her face-to-face yet, and here's another opportunity for us to get to chat. And today we're chatting in front of you so that you can, along with me, hear the great insights and wisdom that this wonderful lady has to share with us. Elizabeth is a professional organizer who helps home-based business owners organize their offices, homes, and calendars in order to free up the time and resources they need to reach their goals. Her mission in life is to help us increase our clarity and confidence so that we can earn more money and increase our enjoyment in life, and she's here today to talk about boosting our confidence. Welcome, Elizabeth.
I'm glad to be here, Marnie. Thank you.
Well, I'm so excited to have this hour with you because you are just a guru. You really help a lot of people to see where their maybe lack of organization or maybe the information they simply don't have to help fill in those holes so that they can really be productive and have a lot more enjoyment in what they do as far as their life and their business goes. How did you ever start into this organizational thing?
It's a pretty good story, Marnie, because I was not born organized. But in 1985, I had one of those aha moments that change our lives forever, but we don't know it at the time. In 1985, our four kids were 5, 3, 2, and a baby. So I had four kids age five and under. And life was chaotic and crazy, and I was the kind of mom who would forget carpool day. I forget it was my day to bring cupcakes to preschool and all that. I was not in control of my life. Love these children dearly. That wasn't the issue. It was me. And one day, Marnie, I was in the playroom watching the kids play, and I thought, boy, I don't like how I'm not. I don't feel like I'm being a good mom, a good home manager. And I thought, you know, what can I do? You know, what could I do? And I started thinking, well, before I got married and had children, I ran a small clothing store. And I ran it pretty organized. What did I do there? Well, I planned ahead. So, Marnie, I started doing things like planning my meals a week in advance, you know, going to the store once a week. Mm-hmm. I started planning for the next day, the night before. I started having regular laundry days. What I did, Marnie, was I put systems into my home. I started running my home like a small business, but the product was kids, not clothes.
Yep.
And it just changed everything, Marnie, because I felt better about myself, about my home, about how I was handling everything, and I realized that gave me confidence. Mm-hmm. So fast forward 20, 25 years and started teaching others to do this and then wrote the book Organize with Confidence.
Awesome. And that's where I came into the scene with you is at the stage where you were focusing about 100% of what I knew of you on organization. And now you've written a new book called Confidence, Now It's Your Time, 31 Days to a More Extraordinary You. And that's what we get to talk about today. All right. So I am excited to pick your brain about this. And you guys, if you haven't already done so, you want to download the listener notes at marniesfriends.com, or if you're listening to the archive, you go over to leadershipattitudes.com. Okay, so the first thing you say that in order to boost our, you know, to think bigger, we have to challenge our comfort zones. And I guess that maybe sounds a little obvious, but I wanted you to share your insights on that because I like how you're thinking.
Okay, thank you, Marnie. You know, we hear a lot about our comfort zone, and we should get out of our comfort zone. Well, if the comfort zone was so comfy, why do we want to get out of it? So I think really a comfort zone is a place of discomfort. You know, we're not really comfy there. We want to think bigger. And I think like with most things, Marnie, a new perspective helps. And so a few years ago, I had a new perspective about comfort zones. And it was when my youngest son, Micah, was going to be a senior in high school. And he was thinking about attending Colorado State. And at that time, my daughter Emily lived in Denver. And so we're going to go out and visit Emily and then visit some colleges. And my daughter Emily is an event planner. So whenever you visit her, she always plans all these events and things. And she said, Mom, the coolest thing would be to go up to Breckenridge in the mountains. Then you rent a bike through a company. They take you in a van up to Vail Pass, and then you ride your bikes 14 miles down the mountains to Frisco. And or maybe it's vice versa with the towns, but whatever. All I heard was, Marty, ride 14 miles on a bike.
Right.
And I haven't ridden a bike in years, let alone, you know, 14 miles.
Right.
So right away I was got in my comfort zone thinking, oh, no, I can't do that. But then here's the perspective, Marty, the new perspective. I started thinking, well, wait a minute. Micah loves the mountains. He loves to ride bike. He's one of those trick bike riders you'd see in, like, bike parks. And Emily, you know, loves the outside, loves the mountains. What if I stopped thinking about myself, took myself out of the equation, and put Emily and Micah first? What would I do? Well, I'd go on the bike ride. And so we did this bike ride, Marty, and it was gorgeous. And, of course, it's all downhill, so it's not hard. But I would not have had that adventure if I hadn't taken myself out of the equation. I mean, when you think about it, like, I mean, think about that story in the Bible when the disciples were in the boat in that storm in Matthew, and Jesus told Peter to come to him, and he was scared, but he got out of the boat. And when he had his eyes fixed on Jesus, he was fine. But the minute he thought about himself, looked down at the turbulent water, he started to sink until he looked at Jesus again. It's the same thing with our comfort zone. If we take keep our eyes on Jesus, take our eyes off ourselves, it's amazing what we can accomplish. We have no idea what we can accomplish.
When I think about comfort zones, I right away go to the thought process about status quo and how the subconscious mind is always pushing us to keep status quo, to, you know, like when you're going to slip and fall, how the body just autocorrects, or when you're too hot, you'll get the shivers, you know, to warm up a little bit, or too cold, rather. You get the shivers, or too hot, you'll sweat a little bit. And it's doing that in all areas of our life. And so these areas where we say it's a comfort zone, I agree with you that a lot of those areas are a discomfort zone, but they just so happen to be the norm. It's just the accepted norm. And it takes a little bit to challenge those and to actually say, how could I think about this differently? Like, okay, in your story so far, you've given us two great examples. The story of the bike ride where you had to look at it from a different perspective, and also the story of how you became an organized mom was you had to say, okay, but what did I do when I was running a store? I behaved differently than I'm behaving now. And you came and you applied those to the home. So, like, for me, you know, there's areas in my life where I want to change, but that, you know, to get your mind around that change takes a little bit of what does it take? I always think it takes a little bit of discomfort, quite a little sometimes.
Yes, and courage. Like you said, the status quo, we're used to that. Maybe it's not all that great, but we're used to that.
Yeah.
And when we think outside our comfort zone, it's a little bit scary. When we actually stop thinking about ourselves, putting others first and do it, we find out it's not that scary at all.
Yeah. Right.
It's actually more fun living out of the comfort zone, I think.
Well, it's a difference between someone always being afraid that they're going to fall and someone who knows that even if they fall, they'll get back up. That's awesome. Well, let's talk about the fear that comes right before you start stepping out of your comfort zone.
Yes. You know, I often say, Marnie, it would be cool, maybe not so cool, but kind of cool, if we could put a computer chip in our brain, and every time a fear flipped through our brain, it would ding at us, and I bet it would ding constantly, because I think we get so used to our fears in our head, we don't even notice them anymore. You know, oh, I can't do that. That'll take too long. Oh, I can't organize that drawer. There's too much stuff. I don't know what to do. So we stop ourselves all the time. And I think with fears also, it needs a new perspective. And I face fears as much as anyone else. I mean, I'm now a speaker, but before I started speaking in 2001, I was terrified of speaking, absolutely terrified. The only reason I'm a speaker today, because a dear friend of mine told me that, Elizabeth, if you want to get organizing clients, and I had no money to market or advertise, she says, you need to give workshops. People will hear you. They'll know they can't do it themselves, and they'll hire you. And I went this whole thing to her about how scared I was and my awful speech class in high school and all that. And she looked at me and she said, but Elizabeth, I believe in you.
Mm.
Now, when
what
someone believes
friend.
In you, you can do amazing things. But the perspective I want to give, if I can share another story, because like anybody else, I face fears all the time. But you have to know that I live in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, okay? And so it's a very rural, great, awesome Midwest place. But I've never even ridden the city bus, okay? So I was going to speak in August of in 2009 in Atlanta, Georgia. And there's going to be someone going to pick me up from the airport. And she said, the Atlanta airport's so huge, I'd really appreciate if you would take the MARTA train and I'll pick you up at a certain spot. Well, Marnie, I didn't want to appear to be like a local yokel from South Dakota, so I wanted to act like I knew what she was talking about. So I emailed back. I said, oh, sure, you know, that's fine. And I get off the phone. I run to my husband in the kitchen. I say, Bruce, I need to get on this MARTA train in Atlanta, Georgia. I have no idea what it is. I don't know if it's safe, if it's above ground, below ground, on. And he goes, well, no, Elizabeth, that sounds like fun. I said, no, it doesn't. It sounds horrible. It sounds so scary. This is the perspective, Marnie. He looked at me and he said, you know what, Elizabeth? It sounds like an adventure.
Yep.
And that changed everything. I thought, well, yeah, I mean, I have to do it anyway, right?
Right.
So I looked upon it as an adventure, and it truly was an adventure. I have more funny stories from that MARTA train where at one point in the train, she had told me the minute I get on the train, yeah, to call her on the cell phone, and she would know exactly what time to pick me up because she knew how long it would take. The minute I put my hand into my purse to get my cell phone, the train took off, and my wheeled luggage flew down the train and crashed into the end of the wall.
Oh.
And, of course, I had to, you know, people were looking at me like, what on earth? I had to get up, and, of course, I felt like I had to explain. So as I ran to the train while it was going, I told people, it's my first time on the train. It's my first time on the train, like they didn't know, Marty. And I brought the suitcase back, and there are more funny stories. But the point is,
that's great.
Is that I did it. A, I faced my fear, and there really was no reason to be afraid, but I looked upon it as an adventure. And I tell people in my workshops, when you face a fear and it's going to stop you, ask yourself, if I would look upon this as an adventure, you know, what action could I take? And it just changes the whole mindset about it.
Yeah. Well, I know just reframing things. I love that word, reframing, because
yes.
If you take – when you're shopping for a picture frame and you take that picture from frame to frame to frame, it's amazing how the different things pull out of it, isn't it? I mean, you can have this dark frame and all of a sudden you see all the dark hues in there, or, you know, the different frames make a huge difference on the picture. And I love that in life.
Yeah.
And I know for fear for me, instead of thinking of it like an adventure, which is a great idea, I haven't been doing that, I often use the word curious. I'm just so curious.
Okay.
I just am so curious. And so I live in a constant, perpetual state of curiosity about one thing or another, or sometimes 20 things at once. But it takes away a lot of the anxiety, because the anxiety comes when I don't know how it's going to turn out, and I'm just kind of worried about it. And of course, that fear thing comes right under worry is fear. So for me, that's helped a lot. But yeah, for some people, I think that the idea of an adventure is a great one, just to reframe the fear. And always to keep reminding ourselves that God's at the center of everything. And so there's really never anything to be afraid of. But, of course, that's in the big scheme. In the small, everyday scheme of things, you know, I don't like that definition of fear, that it's false evidence appearing real, because I agree with it to the extent that it is oftentimes false evidence appearing real. But the reality is that, like, people like Stephen was martyred, and, you know, Jesus actually did have to die on the cross, and Sarah really did have to go into a harem, and, you know, Esther really did have to go in front of a king, and she might have been beheaded. And, you know, I mean, all these things, and it's like, okay, so you might tell them not to be afraid, but in their everyday perspective of things, there was something that didn't look too exciting ahead of them, you know, and they had to just trust God through it, and so do we. So just having having a way to reframe it where it brings God into the center of it, you know, and this gets to be an adventure with God, or I'm so curious how God's going to handle this, or, you know, those kind of reframing helps so much.
Yes. And, you know, in 2 Timothy 1:7 it says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power, love, and self-discipline." Mm. Now, I'm not talking about times where, you know, you're in a dark alley and you should run. I mean, run. But I'm talking about in normal day life, you know, the fear isn't coming from God. It's coming from the devil. And if he can keep, like you and I, not speaking in front of groups, Marnie, our fear that he's won. You know, that didn't come from God at all. So I think if we look at that too, that the fear is not from God, and then who is it really from, that can help us move forward also.
Right. Absolutely. Well, this is Marnie Swedberg. We're visiting today with Elizabeth Hagen. That's the name of her website also, Elizabeth Hagen, and Hagen is spelled H-A-G-E-N. And she's also one of our speakers over at womenspeakers.com. So if you can't find her website, you can go over there and find her at womenspeakers.com. We're going to come right back and talk about perfectionism, something that can take a lot of confidence away and take a lot of time that's not necessary. We'll be right back.
The fastest and easiest way to find out which major women's events are coming to your area is to visit www.womensevents.info. That's womensevents.info. It's the only directory of its kind, and it features all of the major events like Women of Faith, Beth Moore, eConference Women, and so many others. It's free to search, and you can find it all at womensevents.info.
Well, this is Marnie. Welcome back. We are talking today about confidence and how to boost yours. Our guest is Elizabeth Hagen, and we are so excited to have her here. She's the author of a couple books, one called Organize with Confidence and the other one, Confidence, Now is Your Time. That's what we're talking about today, and we're going to spend this next little segment here talking about perfectionism. Now, Elizabeth, I think that perfectionism is one of the things in life that I did not get. I'm one of those people. I always say I'm not a noticer. So, like, if my husband says, you know, "Did you notice that 3 weeks ago I shaved my mustache?" I would say, "Oh, gosh, no, I didn't notice." Because I really don't notice too much. You have to kind of get in my face and explain it to me. And the other thing is for perfectionism, there was one time I was working on a poster with my husband. We were early married, and I was working on this poster with him. And he kept saying, "It's okay, Marnie, I'll do that part." And then I would start something else, and he'd say, "It's okay, Marnie, I'll do that part." And then I said, "Don't you want me to help you?" And he said something back about, "Really, I think I'd rather just do it." And I said, "Are you a perfectionist?" And he said, "Marnie, if the scale of perfectionism is 0 to 10, I'm about a 4, and you're about a negative 2. And some people would have felt really bad about that, but I thought it was really funny. And it was really true that I really am such a big picture person that it's real difficult for me to get down and worried about the itty-bitty details of things. But there are some people, Elizabeth, that really, really struggle with this perfectionism thing. And why don't you just address that? How does someone that that's really a challenge for, how do they begin to balance that out?
Yes. Well, as a recovering perfectionist, I can speak to this, Marnie, okay? What helped me once was I saw a quote by Michael J. Fox, and he said, "I'm careful not to confuse excellence with perfection. Excellence I can strive for. Perfection is God's business." Now, we all know, I think, logically that there's no perfection this side of heaven. But yet, for some reason, in the day-to-day life, we think we need to do things perfectly. I think you're blessed not to have that gene, Marnie. But I think a lot of women do. I'll give you an example. As you said, I'm a recovering perfectionist. But, you know, we had those 4 kids in 5 years. When we brought the 4th child, Sean, home from the hospital, and he was a 10-pound, 8-ounce baby.
Oh, my.
Out of me. I'm not a very big person. And so there are a lot of complications. But anyway, by the time I got home, the day I got home from the hospital, Marnie, and picked up the other 3 kids, I went home and made homemade bread. We're talking with yeast. I made homemade cookies with homemade frosting. 2 days later, I was back in the hospital very, very ill. Because I thought I had to come home and have this back like it was no big deal to have a 4th child, no big deal to have a 10-pound, 8-ounce baby, no big deal to almost die having him, you know, and this perfection could kill me. It's crazy, Marty, just crazy. And so after I heard that quote from Michael J. Fox, it helped me because I think, okay, if I don't do things perfectly, how can I do them? Well, I can do them excellently. Excellently. Mm. We can strive for that. You know, I've never given a perfect speech. I've never written a perfect newsletter. I've never done a perfect interview on a radio show like with you, Marnie. But I can sure try and do it excellently and then give ourselves a break.
What is, maybe I'm a little sick here, but what is the difference between perfect and excellent?
Oh, sure. Okay. At least to me, okay. Perfection means it is to the letter perfect, the comma, the grammar. There's no room for improvement, okay?
Okay.
To me, excellence is I did as best I can.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. To me, there's a difference, and luckily, because I know it will never be perfect. In fact, there is, if I could read this quote, hang on a second here. See, at least for me, when I think about perfection, I think about it as being a quest for the best, okay?
Mm.
But there's an author named Julie Cameron, and she wrote the book The Artist's Way, and she wrote this. Perfectionism is not a quest for the best. It is a pursuit of the worst in ourselves, the part that tells us that nothing we do will ever be good enough.
Wow.
I know. So I had to read that over
read that
and over
again. Wow.
Okay, all right. Okay, so perfectionism is not a quest for the best. It is a pursuit of the worst in ourselves, the part that tells us that nothing we do will ever be good enough. Because I think logically we know there's nothing perfect here on earth, okay? But yet, if we keep striving for it, it's kind of the worst in us, the worst part of us telling you, go for perfection, and we know we never will, and so we think we're horrible.
Wow, it just that's really, really a good quote. that's really something. Because actually, we know God is perfect and we are created in his image. And don't we all just love something that goes the way it's supposed to? I mean,
sure.
When something, you know, every once in a while, I work with the worship team at our church, and every once in a while, there will be a service. And afterwards, you just go, wow, that was like everything.
Yes.
Not only was the spirit present there, but like usual, but everything technically went well. It was just so wonderful to have that. And I would say a little taste of heaven where it truly will be perfect. But if that's what we need to have in order for us to be content with what we did today, you know, I can remember on one hand how many times we've said that at the end of a service.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
In 20-some years.
Yeah. And I bet the worship team, if you go to them, one of them mess up a word or something. So if you ask them if they thought it was perfect, they'd say no. On your side, it was.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's almost always something.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can I share something out of Galatians with this that I think spoke to me, at least, Marnie?
Yeah.
And this is the version of the Bible, The Message. And it's Galatians 6 verse 4. But God says, make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you've been given, and then sink yourself into that. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. But here's the phrase. Each of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the X. I can do the creative best I can and then let it go. Let it go.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's so important. And, you know, I spend so much of my time, Elizabeth, encouraging people to recognize how unique they are. That when they do it, it's never going to look exactly like when somebody else does it because it's not supposed to.
Yeah.
And if that's the standard, it's going to be pretty tough to sustain that or even attain it at all. Yeah. Well, we're going to talk next about kind of shifting here a little bit, talking about why we need to build margin into our calendars in order to manage it. And there's a book called Margin. I just love that book. It talks about the need in our lives, you know, just like in every book that you read, there's space around the outside edges of the pages. And book publishing, like everything else, you know, is a business. They need to be careful to use their resources wisely, or they can't stay in business. So why do these book companies always put so much margin around the outside edge? They could take the writing right to the edge and use less pages and charge a little less for the book or whatever, but they don't. Why? Because we have to have this margin. And when you were, said you were going to talk about managing our calendars to build in some margin, I was like, oh, I love that idea, and I do it all the time. So go ahead and share maybe the principle behind it and then how people can actually put it into practice.
Sure. Okay. I want to share with you first a quote from an article I found online by Pastor Dan Dick. And because I hear a lot about time management, and will you speak on time management, and what's the best time management tool, what's the best time management book? And again, it's a mindset thing. And he said, we do not have any less time than any other generation, any other cultures, but we claim a level of time-related stress unparalleled in our history. Mm-hmm. Time management books and time planning software flood the market. People are seeking practical solutions to the perceived time crunch. Perhaps these tools will make a difference, but isn't likely. The problem is not how to cram more life into the time we're allotted, but how to set priorities and organize our living in a grace-filled and fulfilling way. Mm. We need is a change of heart, not a new smartphone. Okay?
Yeah.
So speaking of a change of heart, years ago I was working with a wonderful client in her mudroom / laundry room, a lovely room, but just chuck full of stuff and clutter. I didn't even know there was a sink in there until 4 hours into the job. But we got it all done in one day. And as I always do, I always go through all the cupboards with my clients, make sure they remember where we put things. And we opened up one cupboard that had four shelves. And the top three shelves, we had labeled bins for the crafts for the kids. It was a craft cupboard. And the fourth shelf now was empty. Before, that cupboard was packed full. So the shelf is empty. And my client looked at me and said, oh, Elizabeth, an empty shelf. What shall I put here? And I said, nothing. We need to have empty space in our home, in our office, in our time, in our calendar, in our life, okay? So first of all, know that, and know that that's okay. For some reason, people think they have to, if I say, well, how are you? Oh, I'm so busy. I'm just can't put one more thing in my schedule. And I say, I'm so sorry. But people think that they need to live like that. No wonder they're so stressed out. Mm-hmm. And so my principle here, or my, I guess, action step for you is to, maybe on a Sunday, look at your week coming up and think to yourself, what would a profile of a wonderful week look like? Will there be time for, you know, devotions, time for church, worship, time to exercise, time to get the groceries? You know, you put in all these things that are so important. And then look at your real schedule. How does that match up with that? Probably not very close. Well, if we never plot out the profile of our wonderful week, we never will have it. So start making changes in your life and your schedule to match the profile of your right fit week, and amazing things can happen.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know one of the things that really helped me was several years ago, I was planning a Bible study expo, and I wanted to have Beth Moore come as one of the speakers. And it was going to be an online thing, so she wouldn't need to travel to us. She could just join us for 15 minutes. But I called her office and got through to the person who does her scheduling, and I'll never forget what the gal said to me. She's looking at a schedule of something 6 months out, and she said, oh, I'm sorry, we can't even fit a feather into that week. And I thought, you know, isn't that wonderful management when we have our parameters set so well that we know exactly at the level where I have to say no now, otherwise I'm going to do more than I wanted to do, you know? Yeah. She just knew this was how much time she could give to media in that week, however much it was. And maybe it was zero, maybe it was a ton, you know, I don't know. I just know that what her scheduler knew 6 months in advance how much she could not do. And that's so important for us to remember, is that it's okay to say no, because every time we say no to somebody, we've said yes to something else. Every time we say yes, we've said no to something else. And so instead of looking at it as a straight yes or no, you have to say, no, I'm saying both every single time. I just have to pick what I'm saying it to.
Oh, yeah. I love that. You can't put a bit of feather.
I know. I loved it. It was such a wonderful phrase. And at that time, really, Elizabeth, at that time, I was really overwhelmed. I was trying to do too much. And it was like, oh, if someone at the level of a Beth Moore, who's
yes.
just got invitations coming in all the time, of course she would have to get to the point where she would be able to just say no without blinking. Just, I'm sorry, I cannot, you know. And so do we. So do you. So do I. We don't have to get to that level to learn this. We can learn it wherever we're at because
yes.
we do. All day long, every day, we say no to all kinds of stuff, and we say yes to all kinds of other stuff. Like today,
yes.
I did not go exercise at a gym today. I did something else with those hours. Yesterday we didn't go swimming, but last night I raked. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, we're saying yes and no all the time. We have these choices in our life, and that's the consequences and the results that we're getting, positive or negative, is based on the choices that we're making, and a lot of it has to do with our calendar.
That's true. And who's responsible for your calendar? You are.
Yep, just one.
Yeah.
Yep.
At least us. We don't have staff. Really, I don't have staff. But yeah.
Well,
so,
even if you have
both.
Staff, though. Yeah. Even when yeah. we have staff that are scheduling for us, we're still ultimately responsible.
Yeah.
We may
exactly.
give them a segment of the schedule and
yeah.
say, "You can schedule me for this much," you know. But
yeah.
we're ultimately responsible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
Yeah. Love it. Now, what is one of the things that you do in order to, what is one of the management tools that you use for calendar? Do you have a favorite calendar that you use? Or
oh, sure. Sure. I use Microsoft Outlook, and the calendar is fabulous. It syncs to my smartphone, and one reason I love Outlook is the older I get, Marnie, the more visual I'm getting,
mm-hmm.
and so every appointment is color-coded. So when I bring up a month at a glance, you know, on my screen, I've got a very large monitor here, I can see at a glance there's not much personal color in there. Or
mm-hmm.
there's not enough marketing color or personal or whatever it is, and
mm-hmm.
I can
right.
very easily gauge every week when I look at it about by colors. So I love that tool, the color
yeah.
coding of appointments in Microsoft Outlook.
And I use the Google Calendar, same kind of
okay.
concept there. Both of these are very easy to use online as well as they go to your phone.
Yes.
You can share them with – I'm not sure about Outlook, but I know with Google you can share it with your family. Can you do that with Outlook?
No. Well, not
no.
if you're on like the server or something, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
with Google you're able to share it with your family even so
yes.
that they can actually add appointments or see where you're free
yes.
or full already. So that really helps. And then another, the tool that I use for scheduling like speaking engagements or like expos or employee reviews where I've got a whole bunch of people that have to fit into a certain small spaces of time, I use a company called supersass.com, and it's super and then the word SAS, SAAS.com, and SAS is actually a programming style, but supersass.com is who I use, and that is a wonderful organizational tool for times when you need people to actually make their own appointments. So what I do over there is I say, here's the block of time that I have available. I divide it out into however long, maybe an hour if it's an employee review, or let's say for an expo it's a 15-minute interview, and then I just say, just pick one, sign up, and we'll go from there. And that takes me out of the loop for scheduling all those things. All I have to do is say where the chunk of time is, and then the people can
sure.
pick whichever time among that time that they want. So that's been really helpful to me. And that one also can read my Google Calendar and block off. Now if I've all of a sudden got a different engagement that's coming
yes.
in the middle of that chunk of time, it just blocks it off. So those are there's so many great things we can do with calendars and tools like that, and we aren't here today to talk so much about that,
yes.
but just really important to remember to not book it all solid. You have
no,
to give yourself
no, we don't want we want space, some space with empty shelves in there.
You know, I love that. That's what I was thinking. There was something I was going to say at the end of that story, and I forgot, but I remember now. The empty shelf thing. For those of you who've had that, oh, good, an empty shelf. What should I put there? For those of you who really related to that feeling, you should just as a test and kind of to stretch yourself just a little bit, you should just find a shelf in your home or a drawer and empty it out and just require that you keep it empty for a certain amount of time just as a stretching experience. Because really, it's so funny. If you're the type of person that has to have everything crammed completely full, you have to start somewhere, kind of releasing that grip of, and I'm not sure, it probably comes from all kinds of different things in your background that you feel that way. But I remember one time a lady coming into my kitchen, and I mostly have clear counters. I don't have a lot of clutter on my counters
sure.
at all. And she came in and she said, "How can you work in here?" And I thought that was the funniest comment. And I thought that was really hilarious. But her counters are absolutely plumb full of everything right up to the, you know, cupboards underneath. So, you know, different people do it different ways. And there's, it's not like there's a right or a wrong way. But if you are feeling like, if you are feeling like your life is too full, it's too crammed, well, this is a wonderful little experiment for you to do that will help you to just learn to enjoy the value of an open space in your life, in your physical world, as well as in your calendar. Yeah, that's cool. Well, this is Marnie. We're visiting today with Elizabeth Hagen, having a good time here learning about how to boost our confidence and how to, a lot of the ways that we do that is through the organization of our thought processes in our life. We're going to come back and talk about how to change our perspective to end procrastination. That's another big one. We'll be right back.
Successfully maximizing the gifts God has given us is the best gift that we can give back to God. Are you 100% clear about why you're here, about how God defines success for you personally? Are you on track with God's plan for your life? The best life on planet Earth followed by the best possible eternity for you? If not, check out the Success Principles Intensive Training course over at Marnie.com. It's a 6-hour online program that will change how you define and do your life from today forward. It's a biblically based approach to goal setting and achievement. So check it out under the Training tab at Marnie.com.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Marnie Swedberg, and we are enjoying a delightful hour learning about how to boost our confidence. Our guest is Elizabeth Hagen, and her website is elizabethhagen.com. She's also a speaker over at womenspeakers.com. I encourage you to check out her speaking availability there. And she has written a couple of books. We're talking today about her newest book called Confidence. Now is Your Time, 31 Days to a More Extraordinary You. During this segment, we are going to talk a little bit about perspective and how to end procrastination. So, Elizabeth, I mostly think that I don't procrastinate. I'm really just a very self-motivated, I decide I'm going to do something and I just go for it. But I even have a couple areas in my life where I tend to procrastinate. They're just areas that aren't maybe the top of my list, or a lot of times I don't define it as procrastination. I define it differently, therefore I don't have to think of myself in this way. But I think most of us deal with procrastination issues somewhere along the way. So what's a good perspective change to have in order to reduce or eliminate that?
Okay. I'm also a recovering procrastinator, so I can speak on this. You know, when you procrastinate, you put something off until later. And here's the deal. It may be a physical thing you're putting off, maybe a project or something, whatever it is. But when we don't do it, it really affects us more mentally. It weighs on our shoulders when we're on a walk that night with our spouse or playing catch with our daughter on the front yard. We wish we had gotten those things done. They're weighing on our brain. And oftentimes, and there are many reasons why we procrastinate, but one is we procrastinate when something seems overwhelming and just it's just too big, we don't really know where to start, okay? And a few years ago, I saw an ad for a TV show called Fintervention. It's where a personal trainer would work with people who wanted to lose weight. And one of the ads showed a gal who got on a scale, and they said, "Oh, you lost 6 pounds." And she screams out, "That's the size of a small puppy." And she was so excited. Mm-hmm. And what hit me about that morning was she wasn't thinking about the 40 more pounds to lose, okay?
Right.
She's excited she lost 6 pounds, and she equated it to the size of a small puppy. That made sense to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do for myself and I teach others is when you are overwhelmed by something large, then break it down to small puppies.
Right.
You know, set your timer for 20 minutes. We can do anything for 20 minutes. Fine, when the buzzer goes off, we might be close to being done, or we get in such a zone because we're focusing on one thing at a time that we'll keep going and get the thing completed. It's really, I think, Marty, just getting it started, and then we're probably okay. So think it in terms of a large project. You know, what can I do on this for the next 20 minutes? It's just 20 minutes. And after that, what's another 20 minutes? And break it down into small puppies.
I love that. The small puppies is a good picture to have in our mind. I know when I train people on event management or any kind of a large project like that, I always say go to the end, see what you want it to look like at the end, then break it down and go backwards and see what's going to happen in between. Yes. And then I encourage people to put a time amount next to each of the project segments. If the project is over 6 hours long, then they should break it down farther than that, but they should break it into two or three projects inside of that, so that nothing is ever too overwhelming. I ended up working at the restaurant today. One of our team leaders was gone out of town. Another team leader had something else going on. One of the team leaders, so we were down to hardly anybody to sub, then left, and then somebody got sick. So I ended up working our restaurant today without knowing I was going to. But I was talking over there about one of the projects. I have two large projects coming up, one that's a 20-hour project and one that's a 30-hour project. And I haven't yet had time to break those down into smaller segments. So I look at them and I think, oh, I'm never going to be able to get those done. But as soon as I have time to break them down, I will then have 15-minute to 120-minute projects. And those I can find time for. I can find time for those because I know that this is where I want to go. It's what God wants me to do.
Yes.
I know that there's time to do these things. But when I look at that big 20 number or the big 30-hour number, it's like, I just can't. So I think that's huge. That's a great perspective of why we procrastinate is because it's just too big.
Hmm. I think also, Marty, we also want to wait till the perfect time to do it, let's say. Ecclesiastes 11:4, God cautions, those who wait for perfect weather will never plant seeds. Those who look at every cloud will never harvest crops. Mm. So there never is a perfect time for anything. So just like you said, break it down to small chunks or puppies and just go from there.
Wow, that is such good advice. Yeah. Now, your next point here is kind of an interesting one.
Yeah.
You say in order to increase our delight in life, we need to listen more, to really listen differently than we're listening. So talk to us about that. I'm not sure what you're thinking there.
Okay. What I'm talking about is all the assumptions we make in our life, okay? Let me give you an example as a business owner. One of the tools I teach my clients and myself is to make phone calls. You know, with all this social media, people are losing personal connections, so make phone calls. And of course, I call companies about speaking for them. And for years, I stopped myself because I would think, well, maybe they don't bring in speakers, or maybe they don't pay, or maybe they don't want my topic. I would assume things, okay? So then I would not do anything. And a few years ago, I was speaking to a MOPS group, and MOPS are mothers of preschoolers. They meet in churches. And speaking to this wonderful group of young moms. And as I was speaking, there was a woman in the crowd who paid no attention to my speaking at all. I mean, she was totally disinterested. And so I made an assumption, Marnie, that she had no interest, could care less. And so I stopped looking at her, and I started focusing on the other gals in the room who were attentive and were responding, okay? Mm-hmm. I was making an assumption. So I really was not anyway, I make an assumption. And so after the talk, I was at my product table, and she came up, and she started talking to me, but I really didn't listen to her very well because I was assuming, I was surprised she was, I didn't know why she was at my book table because she seemed so disinterested. I talked to her a little bit, but didn't really listen. And other gals came up, and I was talking, and then she kind of hung around. When they left, she started talking to me again, and then she shared her story. She was 26 years old, two kids, and her husband had passed away a year earlier.
Hmm.
She had more in her mind while I was talking in that group of things about organizing. Okay, but she loved organizing, was not very good at it, but loved it, had lots of books, and was really, really interested in my book. Okay? Because of my making assumptions, I wasn't listening to her.
Mm-hmm.
Or because I make assumptions, I don't try things that would really cause me great delight in my life and others. And so I think that we really, really need to hear in James 1:19, God says, lead with your ears, follow up with your tongue, and let anger straggle along in the rear. But what really got me with that is to lead with my ears.
Hmm. Yeah, listen first. Yeah, that's really good. I it's so easy to make assumptions, and so many of them are wrong.
We have no idea how many are wrong because we assume.
Yeah. Like one of the things I probably since we purchased our restaurant 10 years ago, and now we have a retail store too, but working with all these employees, and one thing that I do as a manager, that if you're in a position of leadership and you're listening to me, I hope that you'll be encouraged to do this, is whenever somebody says something to you about one of your employees or one of your volunteers or whatever, to actually go directly to that person as quickly as possible and say, you know, I was told or I heard or somehow I came to learn this, and I just wanted to hear what you had to say about it. Because I think that probably 99% of the time what I heard was either incorrect or it was only part of the information, and given the rest of the story, it made perfectly good sense for the person to do exactly what they did or for the person to say exactly what they said. You can always be misquoted, taken out of, you know, context. And a lot of times, so what I would hear was second or third hand already. So the person telling me didn't have the context. They just heard it and were appalled. And I was like, well, I'm appalled too. I need to go check this out. But when I talk to the people, hardly ever is it as bad as it's made out to be. And it's just saved so many relationships, saved so many employees, and just been a wonderful way to manage. And my staff knows I don't save anything up for our 6-month review. When we get to the 6-month review, we just have a great conversation and a raise usually. Because we've dealt with everything as it came up. We just deal with the stuff like you would with a child. Yeah. You don't make them wait a month to give them correction.
Yeah.
Well, adults really need that kind of consideration as well. Don't save it up for people. And if you hear something, boy, go talk to the person, especially if it's something that's wounding you. Don't just believe it. Go ask.
How awesome that would be in a marriage. You know, my husband's the kind of guy who internalizes things and doesn't want to confront, so he keeps things inside. And then once a year, it's like, whoa, you know, where'd that come from? So we're trying to work together to, you know, keep things current is what you're saying. You know, keep things current,
right.
That helps make so much. And not to assume that I know what he's thinking, because I don't. I think after 33 years I might, but I don't.
Right.
Yeah.
My husband and I actually have kind of the reverse of that. I a lot of times will hear Dave say something, and I don't know that I make an assumption, but I am. And so then what we do is a lot of times when we travel together, some of the things that kind of just sat a little wrong with me, like it'll be like, okay, it's fine if you want to do it that way, but I don't understand it or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll bring those back up, and it's amazing when he tells me the perspective that was behind the reason he said that about that. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I'm so glad I asked, because I thought you were just a little weird, you know. But you really had reasons. Consider that. Oh, well, this is such good advice. We're going to come back one more time with 7 steps to achieving your goals and dreams, and we will be right back.
Do you carry a few extra pounds around than you'd like? Are you sick to death of dieting, or maybe sick of resisting the urge to diet because every time you try, you gain back more than you lost? Check out eatingwithgod.com. That's eatingwithgod.com. It's the easiest, most obvious, and most powerful non-dieting approach to weight management that you'll ever find. Starting today, you can enjoy every bite eating with God. Learn more at eatingwithgod.com.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Marnie Swedberg. Our guest today is Elizabeth Hagen, and we are talking about confidence, how to boost ours and getting organized. And we are going to ask Elizabeth right now to share the 7 steps to achieving your goals and dreams.
Okay. Are you a football fan, Marnie?
Not too much.
Okay, well, just bear with me, okay?
Okay.
Okay, we are huge Vikings fans because the Vikings are the closest major team here in the Midwest. And we've had season tickets for years, and we go up to all these games, and I'm fine. I go along and I watch. I'm okay. I'm not a big deal for me, but it's okay. But a few years ago, the whole family went, the adult kids and everybody. So you all went there, and I was at the game. And about halfway through the game, I got, totally bored. And I always carry a small spiral notebook with me. And I started thinking about the football game that was going on in front of me in this huge stadium and about goals and dreams. You know, we all are told that, set our goals and write them down, but do we? And so as I was watching the game and thinking about goals, I came up with these seven steps that tied in with this football game, okay?
Okay.
So step number one is start with a plan. Start with a plan. If you think about an NFL football team does not show up to a game to start playing. They've had practices, gone over the plays, the coaches reviewed the other teams, and so forth. And the coach's plan is written down. Now, it may not go as exactly as he planned, but it is written down. So start with the plan and write your goals down. Step number two, surround yourself with supportive people. Surround yourself with supportive people. At this game, there are 62,000 fans plus the cheerleaders. Of course, not everybody was a Vikings fan, but most were, and definitely the cheerleaders. Who do you have to support you with your dreams?
Hmm.
When I think about Bruce, he's been a Vikings fan since 1972, and he hangs in there no matter what, and they've been pretty bad the last few years. He's a fan. It's like he is with me. I've had my ups and downs, but he is there. He's my biggest fan.
Hmm.
Step number three, setbacks are normal. I mean, rarely is a ball caught at the one-yard line and run 99 yards in for a goal. It happens occasionally, but not very often. I mean, there are setbacks along the way. We go 10 yards, we go back 5 yards. We go 20 yards, go back 3 yards. Same with the dreams we set. We may work on them, move them forward, maybe a setback, we move backwards. But once in a while, we get that 99-yard touchdown. We just must not expect that every time. Step four, take a time out. Take a time out. When the going gets tough in a football game, the coach always calls a time out. I mean, the same thing goes for us. Next time you feel stressed out about your business or your life, I mean, take a time out. Go for a walk. Go to a bookstore. Take a nap. But timeouts work because they clear our mind, and then usually the answer that we need comes to us outside the office. And I'm counting here. One, two, three. Okay. So step five, you are the coach. There are many positions on a football team, and one person cannot do it all. Occasionally a quarterback will take the ball and run with it, but he usually hands it off or passes it to someone who is specialized and running the ball down in for a touchdown. So who have you passed your ball to lately, or are you doing everything yourself? So I think that we need to, so many times in our goals, delegate some of it to someone else to help us move the ball, so to speak, forward a little more quickly.
Yeah.
And then step six is listen to your inner referee.
Mm.
Listen to your inner referee. NFL football games have very experienced referees. We don't have professional refs in our life, but, of course, we have our God is in our life. And are you taking the time to really listen to him? Because, of course, he's always right. So if you've ever decided on a dream and it's just not happening, take time to listen to what God wants to tell you. And maybe it's the right time to drop that dream and try something else. We don't know unless we keep in conversation with God. And then step seven, the last one, is stuff happens. Stuff happens. Sometimes there's an interception during a football game. There's a fumble. There's a risk because something didn't go as expected. So if you had some fumbles or interruptions lately with your dream, health issues, kids need more time, need to go into the restaurant, you didn't think you need to work there that day. I mean, stuff happens. So take the time to take care of what needs to be taken care of and then get back to working on your dreams.
Are awesome.
Yeah, thank you. And see, you're not a football fan, but they still spoke to you, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Totally relate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, my premise is, now is your time. I don't know what's happened in your past. Some things have happened in my past that have kept me stuck there. But I'm not letting my past predict my future. And so now is your time. Write your dreams down where you can see them, and then set your action plan into place.
That's just awesome. So if you're listening and you're trying to catch those, the A is start with a plan and write it down. B is surround yourself with supportive people. C is setbacks are normal, and wow, Elizabeth, is that ever important to know? And I think that's kind of back to the perfectionism thing, too. If you don't expect setbacks, you're going to think you failed.
Yes.
Honestly, you just got to count on them.
Yeah, they're going to happen.
Yeah. I love the analogy of the football game right there, or any sports game, because you very rarely, football especially, it's just a long way down that field, or soccer, you know, you very rarely get to just start at one end, go right to the other, and make a goal.
You want a statistic? As of this time, in NFL history, there's been only 12 times a 99-yard touchdown has been scored.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. What a great reminder for us. And I always think, you know, the bigger the thing is that you're working on, the more setbacks you're going to have.
Yeah.
The more, you know, the more time and money and all that stuff you're going to have to invest, and the bigger the result is going to be at the end. But, yeah, I love that one. And then the fourth one there was take a time out. And I have to tell you, Elizabeth, when my kids were teenagers, mm-hmm. I set up an arrangement with them. Because I really did have terrible PMS. I didn't have such a bad menopause now, but I really had terrible PMS. And I would get a little out of sorts for about 10 days a month. And I, as my teens got older, they became kind of more aware of it, and they also knew how to trigger it a little bit more. But I gave them permission that if I was getting a little bit unreasonable with them, that they could just say, "Mom, I wonder if you should just take a time out." And my teens would say that to me very respectfully, but they would just recognize that it wasn't how I wanted to behave. I wasn't behaving the way I wanted to behave, and I'd given them permission to hold me accountable to that. And that really, really helped our relationship. And, you know, we just have such a good relationship now as they're adults. And I just encourage you that this tip alone is worth the whole hour. Give yourself a time out sometime, even if you can just go in the bathroom for a minute and just get alone and breathe up a prayer, just a SOS. I mean, it really can make a huge difference. Number five is you are, and you know what, on this one, you said you're the coach, and you could do it that way. I always think of the Holy Spirit as my coach, and you added a new light to that on the next one. You said Holy Spirit's our inner referee, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. I always think of him as my coach, too, so I wrote down captain, that I'm the captain of the team, and I don't want to always be ball hogging and always that kind of thing. I want to be sharing the ball, but that we are in charge, really, of a lot of it. And then the sixth one is listen to the inner referee. And unfortunately, sometimes it's not the Holy Spirit who you've got in that position. Sometimes you're in that position, the worst side of you, the side that's critical, the side that's hopeless, the side that maybe is trying to do it all yourself. And, of course, the Holy Spirit wants to be that referee. And then, stuff happens. It's so true. And if you can't roll with it, you're just going to get run over by it. That's how it's going to go. So, Elizabeth, this has just been awesome material. I've just been taking notes like mad here and gained so much in this hour. If somebody went over to ElizabethHagen.com, what are they going to find there?
They click on the free resources link. I have maybe even hundreds of articles on confidence and organizing and growing your business. So you check that out. And then my book, Confidence Now Is Your Time, is on the products page. They can check that out. So, feel free to come over. They also can get a free newsletter if they subscribe, and they get then a free gift, 10 lessons that everyone must know to be fearless. So lots of great stuff there. Thank you.
That's great. And you, of course, are available for speaking engagements on the topics of confidence and organization, as well as other topics that relate to women and to business owners, small business owners. So I just want to thank you so much for sharing this hour with us. It's been a delight to have you here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Marnie.
Okay, and listeners, thank you for being here. We had a great hour. If you joined us late, be sure to listen to the archive and catch the beginning part. And otherwise, we are going to see you next time. If you ever wonder what's coming up for training, you can find that at marnie.com/events. That's marnie.com/events. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.